Thank you for joining us on the Wednesday afternoon show. Laura here. I would like to talk about a topic which is very close to my heart, and it may not share the opinions of Vectis Radio itself. Little disclaimer there. I'm talking to the campaign team behind Isle of Wight Save Our NHS. As a service user of the NHS services on the island, I cannot speak highly enough of the care myself and my family have received, and this ranges from our GP surgery, all frontline staff, St Mary's A&E, the stroke clinic, the memory clinic, the maternity wards. And I'd like to start this segment off by personally thanking all of the doctors, nurses and NHS staff who work so tirelessly for us, often in very difficult conditions, long shifts with short breaks and hugely underfunded departments. Whatever your political stance, the NHS crisis is something that we cannot ignore. Isle of Wight Save Our NHS is a non-partisan campaign group, and they aim to inform us of the NHS plans on the island and what it means for all of us. They've sifted through the huge amounts of documentation and jargon-filled reviews, and they've simplified the outlining plans. And all of this information is available to read on their website. I'll give you the website details at the end. We'll talk about the national NHS crisis, privatisation and private healthcare, and the US insurance system, the Naylor Review, Isle of Wight plans and current issues, and plans for the public consultation.
I'm Christine Lightbody, and I was one of the co-founders of Isle of Wight Save Our NHS Group around about April of 2017.
My name's Nancy Farrell, and I'm an activist with the group.
So, Christine, tell us about your personal journey. How did you come to co-founding this campaign group?
Right, it was purely by accident, really. I've no political background. I've no background in the NHS. But I did actually start to get interested in what was happening politically. About 2 years ago, I started reading about the NHS, and I heard that there was going to be the big national demonstration in London in March 2017. Somebody suggested online, my co-founder in actual fact, Steve Gibbs, suggested that we could get a mini coach to the demonstration, and not knowing the island that well, I said, well, why don't we just get a coach? And he said, right, go on then. So we worked together, and we actually got about 72 people going up to London for the national demonstration. From there, we came back and we were invited to Hampshire to join with other campaigners to set up a group. So we're actually operate under the umbrella of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Save Our NHS. But our local group is Isle of Wight Save Our NHS.
Yeah. And what was the march in London like?
It was fantastic. I mean, there were about 250,000 people there. It wasn't shown on the media. It was, you know, downgraded, so to speak. They probably said there were about 10,000 there. But it was really good to be with like-minded people because there is such deep concern about what is happening to our NHS. And our job now is to let people know.
Yeah,
because people are completely ignorant of the facts and, you know, what's happening on a daily basis.
Tell us then, what do you see happening nationally that's cause for concern?
We're looking at the actual dismantling of the NHS. It's been fragmented into what they call footprints. There are 44 footprints across England. And that's another thing, it's only affecting England. It doesn't relate to Scotland or Wales, which I don't understand that. But poor old English people we're losing our NHS, and this isn't new. This has been going on for 40 years. You can go right back to the Thatcher days, and you can look at successive governments have all had a part to play in privatisation. The whole thing has accelerated since 2010 under this current government and during the coalition government times. I'm not very political, so I can't really say an awful lot about the political side of it, but I do know about the NHS. And in 2012, they introduced the Health and Social Care Act, which effectively released the Secretary of State for Health from any responsibility to provide healthcare services to the population of England.
Right.
And effectively, that was the start. Yeah. Of proper privatisation. We've had it, you know, with cleaners and catering and all this, but this is actually attacking the frontline services that we all depend on, really.
Nancy, if you'd like to introduce your personal story, how you came to be part of the campaign, and if you've got any more words about the national issue on our NHS, feel free.
Well, I first started out back when the coalition began, when austerity first began, all the austerity measures that they've imposed over the past 8 years. And the NHS is not the only thing that they have been, you know, selling off, basically. When welfare reform happened, so many things got sold off and given to private companies. So there are a lot of private companies now profiting from people who are sick and disabled and the assessments of those people. And the services that they provide to get people back to work and things like that. They're all now run by private companies and they're profiting from them. And the NHS, well, I became involved because after the Isle of Wight Save Our NHS did a film screening of the film The Sell-Off. That was when they first came to my attention. And I was asked to speak at a public meeting about the situation with the mental health services on the Isle of Wight, which are in great disarray at the moment. And they've shipped someone in from the mainland to come and help sort out the situation with the NHS. And they've done this document called the Mental Health Blueprint that they're hoping to, you know,
bring it back.
Bring back. But it's the same situation all over the country, though. Mental health services are always the least well-funded of all NHS services.
Yeah.
And that's how I became involved with the Save the NHS group. And now I help admin the Facebook groups and I write quite a bit of the content for the website as well, don't I?
Our technical expert.
Yeah. We did an analysis of the STP document because we're all under something called Sustainability Transformation Partnerships all over. Christine mentioned that there's 44 footprints for all the different health services all over the country. Mm-hmm. And we're lumped in with Hampshire. So it's Hampshire and the Isle of Wight STP, and we wrote that in simpler language. That's on our website to try and help explain what their plans are for the area.
Can you just tell us your website address so people can go and check out that document if they need to?
Yeah, it's Isle of Wight Save Our NHS.org.uk.
Okay, so for kind of plain English, if you want to go and have a look and see very simply outlines and plans and what's been going on, then go to that website. The restructuring plans of our taxpayers' NHS include the government selling the NHS land off to privateers, mass privatisation of services, and a systematic dismantling of the NHS. And this is something that will impact every single one of us.
We have this crisis. They do say the way to privatisation is to underfund, which has been happening for years and years under this government. Bring the whole service into crisis.
Yeah.
People will say, oh, they'll get angry. And the solution is we'll privatise.
Yeah.
And people think, well, we've no other option. Let's go with it.
It's the better option.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. And then we're moving into really seriously challenging situation there, because once we head towards that privatisation, we're going to be looking at health rationing, and it's going to become a two-tier system just like the United States.
Yeah.
We're continuously seeing on the news, on the mainstream media, which isn't the best guide to what's happening in the world these days because it's so biased.
Yeah.
But, you know, the talk about underfunding, bringing into crisis, if anybody's noticed over the past few months, we are continually being bombarded with the crisis in the NHS. And that is all for one reason. Because once that's been established and people are saying, oh, yeah, I'm prepared to pay a penny in the pound, extra income tax, you know, the next stage is, well, you know, we can't do anything about this. We have to privatise.
Yeah.
And then people say, oh, well, c'est la vie. The public have been led to believe that the national budget is similar to a household budget where you have to break even. And in actual fact, if you study macroeconomics, you find that is not true. And as a sovereign state, with our own currency, we can create, or the government can create, as much money as they need, which they did to bail out the banks to the tune of about £435 billion. And that has no effect on the... it's controlled by taxation, but it doesn't have an effect on the deficit and things like that. It's complicated, and I may not be explaining it that well, but we're being fooled. Basically, the money is there if they were prepared to give it to us. But the whole idea is to shrink the state, not just the NHS, but all the public services. And, you know, at the end of the day, the government won't have anything left to govern because they don't want to finance public services. They want to hand it all over to privateers, to the big corporations, the big fat cats, the billionaires. And we're paying it, but we're paying for that.
Yeah.
And even as we're paying for it, they're taking it away from us, which doesn't seem very fair, does it? These private companies, their first port of call is making profit and paying their shareholders. And they're not interested. No. Well, they might be, but not to the extent that a health service should be.
Yeah.
As long as they make, well, that's what they're in business for, and we can understand that. But they don't want to be taking private public services and putting them into private enterprise, where their remit is to make as much profit as they possibly can.
Yeah, yeah.
What happens with these private companies is that they cherry pick, they take the most lucrative things and make money from it, rather than the money going back into the NHS.
Mm.
It's actually being, you know, distributed to shareholders.
Yeah.
And of course, these private companies, they have tax loopholes that the NHS don't have.
Yeah.
So they can provide services more cheaply for themselves, not for the benefit. But people believe, a lot of people think that what's happening basically is that these companies are operating behind the NHS logo, which effectively doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So people think that when they go, it's actually NHS.
Right.
The dermatology services on the island are completely privately owned by a group of GPs who are shareholders. And, you know, 2 years ago, I went there for an operation on my face and I had no idea. I just like everybody else, I believe the NHS just got a different building.
But
you know, every time money goes to shareholders, it's money that's not going back into the NHS. It's various services on the island. I mean, this is our difficulty. You know, it's finding the information.
Yeah.
It's difficult for us because it's a very time-consuming affair, and you know, it's sickening as well and disheartening.
Yeah.
And sometimes you look at these documents, I've got documents, you know, size of doorsteps from the CCG, which is a clinical care commissioning group, and they are responsible for buying our services, whether it be from the NHS Trust or from the private companies themselves.
Okay.
And
so they're like the hub, basically, the control hub. And are they?
They are the ones that are being instructed by NHS England, which are the people who are behind all the privatisation. And the chief executive officer of NHS England is a guy called Simon Stevens. And he worked for United Health of America, which is one of the biggest global insurers in the world, you know, in the world. And the market is actually saturated in America. Mm-hmm. And his remit is to get out, and the remit of United Health is to get out globally and convert healthcare systems into an American-style operation, and it's frightening.
It is. Yeah. I've spent some time in Switzerland, and that's health insurance as well. And the services you receive through the insurance, tip-top. But then you are paying premiums in Switzerland of £300 a month. NHS Nair and Bevan was to make that healthcare available to everybody, regardless of salary and income. And it's amazing, isn't it, how we can just see that being picked apart and being pushed towards going towards the private healthcare route, which is really very scary.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, people, when we're out campaigning, people say to us, oh, I'm okay, I've got private insurance. But the fact is that private insurance won't mean a thing because, you know, if you have an accident and you need an ambulance, you're taken by the NHS. The private companies don't step in.
Yeah.
You get private insurance for things like, you know, hernias and hip replacements, things like that. So that you can actually go to a private hospital or be treated privately in an NHS hospital even.
Yeah.
So people are being fooled into this false sense of security.
Yeah, and it's all shiny, isn't it?
If in fact they can afford private health, because I couldn't.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing about insurance is there's so many exemptions, pre-existing conditions, you know, and everything has to be covered by the insurers, and it's down to them to decide whether they're going to let you have treatment or not.
Yeah, and don't forget your excess. You know, you're going to have to pay your excess first.
No claims discounts. And out of interest, I wrote out for a quotation for private health, and it was £140 a month.
Yeah.
That, as it stands now, not if we've got an American-style system.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, that's ridiculous. You know, I can't afford that, you know. So he said, well, hang on a minute. You know, if you're prepared to accept the NHS safety net, which is you have to wait for 6 weeks before you can get private cover. But if you can be treated within 6 weeks of the need by the NHS, we can reduce your premium down to £90 a month.
But then you're still basing that on the NHS, aren't you?
You'd be getting treated under the safety net. The NHS would treat you, but you've paid the private insurance company a premium for private healthcare.
Yeah.
But their safety net
it's
crazy.
When I was in Australia a couple of years ago, I knew someone who was actually stabbed on the street. And because of the price of the ambulance, he got his girlfriend to drive him to hospital. He couldn't afford like $300, $250.
Yeah.
And that's just extremely scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just horrendous.
We know that example. If you want to mention about the lady that had an accident.
Yeah, there's videos on YouTube you can find of people. There's a video of a woman who's just been hit by a car, and the driver of the car is filming her saying, no, don't phone an ambulance, I can't afford the ambulance. And he's just hit her. It wasn't her fault, you know, she was accidentally hit by a car.
Yeah.
And she's asking them not to phone an ambulance. And this is what it's like in America, you know, where they have the insurance-based system.
Okay, so next, let's talk about the Naylor Review. Quite a few different parties in government have been involved in doing what the Naylor Review recommends. The Blair government was known to do this, and Coalition and the present government have also been supporting the Naylor Review. Christine, give us a little bit more information about that, would you?
Theresa May was talking to Ian Neil on one of his pre-election programmes. And she's on camera, she said she supported the Naylor Review. Now, the Naylor Review is based on selling off land, buildings, NHS assets to privateers and, at knockdown prices. They call it a fire sale. And it's buy one, get one free.
Oh, my God.
And the idea is that they'll buy out the land and the buildings and redevelop into housing and what have you. And that actually is the plan for Charing Cross, to close it down and to build. Oh, no, sorry, I've got it wrong. It's a plan for Epsom Hospital.
Yeah.
They want to sell off 20% of their land and buildings and convert it into something like 176 flats and 176 car parking places. Yeah. That land and those assets belong to the taxpayer.
Exactly.
And the privateers are taking over it, and they're going to be the ones that profit from it.
Yeah, the shareholders will.
Yeah.
Will reap the benefits.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah. And if you look at the STP plans for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, the estates part, it's in all the STP plans across the country, but they are looking at selling off land that belongs to the NHS on the Isle of Wight and in Hampshire as well. We're not safe from it. It's going to happen everywhere. You know, people assume down here that we're in some sort of insular bubble and none of this will ever affect us. But there's land down here that's worth a fortune. Imagine how much the land down here is worth.
What can happen is that these privateers will buy that land and rent it back, or buy buildings and rent it back. So we're looking a bit like PFIs almost, not quite the same. But when you think that the cost of PFIs was, or the amount loaned through at PFIs was 8 billion, and it's, or 11 billion, and it's costing the taxpayer 80 billion pounds so far in interest payments, because these companies are taking 20-30% interest. And that takes us on to another thing. It's never ending, but we're top heavy in the NHS now. There are so many groups and quengos and organizations, and they're all taking a share out of the NHS. And we need to get back to, you know, basics and put the money into frontline staff who are providing care. You know, for us.
So the CCG, is that, so it's the control hub for the NHS, is that on the Isle of Wight and Hampshire, that's spread between those two, our two locations?
Originally, we had our own clinical commissioning group, the CCG, for the Isle of Wight, but apparently they haven't been functioning that well, and they've now been absorbed into five other CCGs, I believe, in Hampshire. But the strange thing is that some of these CCGs are in northeast Hampshire, and there's Gosport, and I don't know the geography that well. Yeah. But funnily enough, it doesn't include Southampton and Portsmouth, which are the two hospitals which will be absorbing Isle of Wight patients, you know, when we're forced over there for treatment.
So that's the thing, isn't it? Our needs as an island have been completely ignored because we've just been swept up geographically with areas in Hampshire. And I think that's the thing that has really angered and upset islanders the most. The fact that, we'll come to it in a moment, you know, what the plans, we'll start at the beginning of what's been said and we'll go along the timeline. But it's the fact that we have to cross water, and it's the transport costs. But I would say it's more to do with the physical. You know, if you're very poorly, to get across that water is not sustainable.
What we have to realise on the Isle of Wight is that in some way we are quite lucky, in inverted commas, because at least we're retaining our accident and emergency and our maternity departments.
Right.
On the mainland, campaign groups across England are fighting desperately to save their A&Es and their maternity units, because the plan is to actually reduce from 170, I think it is, 170 accident and emergency units down to between 40 and 70. And places
like... More than half.
Yeah. And places like Charing Cross, they're trying to close that down completely and leave it with 20 beds as a sort of small little clinic.
But London, you know, London is vast. Yeah.
People are dying because people are having to travel further.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's imperative that they get to the nearest hospital as soon as possible.
Yeah,
you it's happening all over the country. It's happening in Surrey, in Sussex, it's happening up north, and campaign groups are working so hard to try and do something about it, but we don't get taken seriously enough, I don't think. It needs to come from the top, it needs to come from government, basically. But, you know, they're looking at producing what they call super hospitals and super hubs. Now, the A&E department, as we stand at the moment, is safe on the island.
Are you saying then that this systematic dismantling will in time push those, let's say, let's talk about the case of A&Es, push those A&Es to being so non-efficient that it's kind of like the population are being pushed towards privatisation and healthcare, like we'll then start walking out, you know, we'll start...
Well, it's happening already. There's currently a public consultation about 17 elective treatments that are being taken away from us. Although the public consultation is still ongoing, in actual fact, a lot of this has been applied under the NICE guidelines. So, you know, they sound like... I've got a list here and I won't go through them all. Injections for non-specific back pain, removal of benign skin lesions. Well, how do you know they're benign anyway until they've been analysed?
Yeah.
Grommets for glue ear, tonsillectomy, hemorrhoid surgery.
So
they're saying that these are ineffective and therefore they're going to will only use these treatments in the... you know, when they're absolutely essential.
Right.
So what this is doing is forcing people, because they're not ineffective. People can tell you by their own experience that a lot of these treatments have given them a better quality of life.
Yeah.
And Bob Gill, who is a family GP and has been a veteran campaigner for years now, he actually said to me, you know, if these treatments are ineffective, then they should be banned. And if they're banned, then anybody who is providing operations are guilty of harm and they're guilty of fraud.
Yeah.
You know, so it's game. We're back down to smoke and mirrors, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah. And misinformation.
Misinformation.
Yeah.
And, well, information is so difficult, isn't it, Nancy? Mm. Trying to understand the jargon and if you try and look at some of the CCG documents, it's a nightmare.
Yeah,
it makes your brain hurt actually.
Yeah.
And we have a GP on the island who tried to analyse it, and he said, "I can't do this."
Yeah.
And I actually met up with the CCG a few months ago, and they admitted that yes, it's very difficult to understand, but because we do it every day, it's okay for us. But there's a public consultation coming up next spring, which has been put off month in and month out.
Right.
And, you know, they admit that they need to present this to the public in simple language.
Just been looking at the history of the NHS, because I was asked to write an article about the history of the NHS, and that's drawn me to look at what we had in this country before the NHS existed.
Yeah.
And it was like a disorganised series of charity hospitals. And some local authorities helped to provide healthcare, some didn't, you know, because there was no obligation for them to. And the healthcare for the people who couldn't afford to pay doctors was basically provided by the few people that felt, you know, they should give money to the NHS. Well, not to the NHS, you know, to the charities that, you know, that provide healthcare for the poor.
Well,
so it frightens me to think we might end up going back to a situation like that, where in the end we're relying on charities again.
Yeah, and it's a lottery of what treatment you receive. Yeah.
People say, oh, that's never going to happen in England. But if we get this two-tier system so that people can afford it, we'll get healthcare, and people who can't won't.
Yeah.
There will always be a public kind service of sorts. But they're talking about a lot of the care being provided by charities, by voluntary groups and social enterprise.
Right.
You know, so they're relying on the goodwill of ordinary people to keep providing a service to those that can't afford to pay.
To read in plain English the options for the NHS and how this will affect the services on our island, go to www.iowsaveournhs.org.uk.